welcome to our Stronach 5 show for Friday, September 25th. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornatale, back with you in the Brooklyn Bunker once again. A little bit different format on this show. I'm taking a little bit of a backseat. I'm playing a host role because I'm back teaching this week and the bandwidth is limited, but you're not going to be disappointed. You're not going to be disappointed one bit because we have not one but two guests whose opinion on these Stronach 5 races I know you're going to want to hear. The first one, he's a fixture on these In the Money airwaves, a little bit less so this summer when he was dealing with 17 million crazy things, but he's back for this show and hopefully going to be back a whole bunch. He was back with a fantastic one-on-one interview with Kieran McLaughlin that we dropped earlier this week. I'm speaking, of course, about the man from Planet Texas, the people's champion, Jonathan Kinchin. What's up, JK?
PTF had to dust off the microphone, and, you know, but we're in business now and glad to be back and glad to hang out with you and our other guests as well.
We'll get to him in a second. You and I, we have plenty of catching up to do, and listeners have plenty of questions for you. I'll tell you what, right now, we'll do that on a show coming soon, presumably next week for Preakness Week. We're going to keep things tightly related to the Stronach 5 today and leave them wanting more. And speaking of that second guest, he's returning to the airwaves here, one of our most popular guests historically. Had the pleasure of having him on a number of times in this iteration of the show and even back in the old Place with the Letters podcast days. I am speaking of our buddy, professional horse player, Duke Matisse. Duke, what's up?
What's going on, Pete? I don't know how popular I am, but you know, great to be on your show as always.
Yeah, I'll tell you how popular. And this is not a joke. I've told Duke this before. Bob Baffert, Gary Stevens, Michael McCarthy, Tom Amos, it doesn't matter. Everyone, the record still to this day for the most listens on JK Plus One is still Duke Matisse's episode.
That's pretty impressive. Right. And it's
strong.
Good stuff. All right. Well, today we're talking about the Stronach 5 bet. For the first time, have we had any Pimlicos, JK, or it's all been Laurel since the advent of this show, however many pre-pandemic months ago? Am I right?
Yeah, because I guess we lost Pimlico in its normal time in the spring, and so this is going to be the first run at Pimlico. So when you were looking for your when you're looking at Laurel to try to figure out where the Laurel past performances are, we all found out that you got to dig for Pimlico.
Oh, I was cursing last night looking for the people. Why hasn't Laurel drawn yet? And then JK very kindly revealed to me that's because we're not at Laurel this week, but it's Pimlico, and we're looking forward to this little run that, of course, the Preakness will be highlighting things next weekend. But today we kick things off with Leg A. It begins at 4:20 Eastern on this Friday. Race 8 from Pimlico. We're looking at a 6-furlong maiden special weight race for 2-year-old colts. And JK, let's start with you on this one. I mean, I guess it's nice to have 2-year-olds kicking off a sequence like this in that you'll get further clues in terms of the tote board and the ability to look at them on the paddock, hear what Naomi Tucker has to say about them, etc. But from this far out, how are you looking to approach this first leg of this week's Stronach 5?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. Like you mentioned, to have an idea, there's, you know, Pimlico's not one of those places that traditionally has a workout report that's available. Obviously, if this was taking place at, you know, a Saratoga or a California or Santa Anita or whatever, there's an opportunity to get some insight on how these horses are training in the morning. You kind of have to go back to the old school ways of looking at the pedigrees, looking at the sales prices, looking at the trainers, the riders, to try to get some clues where to go. And when I looked up a lot of these trainers, obviously everyone's eyes are going to gravitate towards the Steve Asmussen runner, but when you look at the other ones, you start trying to come up with a story of which one of these trainers has any success with first-time starters, because there's some that don't have a lot. And obviously Steve Asmussen, I think maybe last Friday he was at 36 2-year-old wins this year, and I'm sure he's probably at 49 now and between now and then, but I'm being facetious. But he's obviously got he's loaded with these 2-year-olds, and he's got this Maryland bred. So why not break the maiden down in Maryland, get a little bit of a bonus since the horse is a Maryland bred? So I felt like Jackson Traveler, the 4, was just a horse I've got no reason why I want to try to beat that one. I don't have enough to lean on to just single the horse. And the only other case that I can make, there's two horses. The 10 horse I think will take some money, King Allen. That horse took money on debut, had a little bit of a trip, but was running against maiden claimers, now is up in class. I feel like that horse will probably be overbet as an alternative, and I landed on the 6, Lugamo. This is a horse that don't know a lot about, but I do know that the sire Chitu was fast. The horse could sprint, so hopefully this horse will have a little bit of ability early. Also, the trainer's 3-for-7 with first-time starters in his career, which is that's pretty good. It's not a big sample size, but 3-for-7 is pretty good. And he's 2-for-5 with two-year-olds dirt sprinting in their first start. So whatever you want to say about the trainer, the horse, he gets horses ready to run first out. So I felt like those two were the ones I wanted the most. And if you're going to use more than that, you kind of have to like hit the all button. And I try to avoid that at all costs.
Definitely JK hit it right on the nose with, I mean, Asmussen, I think he's probably going to be a huge favorite here, the Ford Jackson Traveler. I mean, he's won every two-year-old race around. But the only thing about this horse is he worked back in August out of the gate with a horse called La Urbana, which is a New York bred that didn't really run that great. So that tends me to believe, since this one's a Maryland bred, he just was looking for an easy spot for this thing first time out. So I'm not so sure she's that good, he's that good. I'm going to probably use a bunch here. I'm definitely going to use the horse coming out of the maiden claiming race that stumbled at the start, the 10, King Allen. I like him moving up in class like that. And Gonzalez is a great second-out trainer. So, I mean, I got to use that one. I think the Uncle Mo, number 3, Some Mo, has got some interesting breeding. A lot of offspring that at least shown they can win, and Trevor McCarthy takes the call for Grand Motion. So those are the three main ones. I can't believe JK didn't pick Triple Tito's, number 7. I know he's a big fan of that. I think 3, 4, 10 would be my main ones. If I had to really reach out, you can't go all of these Stronach 5s just because it's so expensive at a dollar. The other ones I would throw in, I know he mentioned the 6. That guy is really good with the first-time starters. I think the 11 might be a sneaky first-time starter. There's 2 babies from that mare that ran decent first time out. They both ran around a 60 buyer. So for a long shot, I think the 11. But mainly 3, 4, 10 with a little 6, 11.
Great information, guys, and I think we can get things kicked off with those numbers. And I like the way the way that flows, and I feel like Duke's idea of trying to narrow up the backup, certainly with the dollar minimum, I'm sure JK would agree, probably the way to go. Let's go down south, gentlemen, to race number 9 from Gulfstream Park with its scheduled post time of 4:27. We are looking at 10-dime maiden claimers here, 3-year-old fillies. And JK, we'll head back to you for your thoughts on this one. How can we keep this thing moving?
Yeah, this is one of those races. It's hard to get a feel for what's going to happen. They've all been beat handily recently at this level. If you look, just starting in order with the 1, beat at this level by 15. You look at the 2, beat at this level by 14. The 3, beat by 30 lengths for a little bit of a higher level. The 4, getting beat by 8 lengths. The 5, I mean, they're all getting beat badly at this level. I ended up thinking I wanted to try to single the 5. That horse has had some excuses, has some tactical speed. Well, you know, compared to these other ones, has some tactical speed. And I just don't trust any of these other ones. And so for me, it'd be like a single A with the 5 and then trying to find some creative horses to try to use as kind of Bs. But horses, I don't necessarily want like the second choice. I want to try to find something a little bit cuter, a little sexier. And I'm sure Duke will have some ideas in that regard.
Well, I like the favorite, unfortunately, but that horse last time from the 1 hole tried to make the gap. So if you go back, if you go 3 back, that Captured Light, the 9, ran a much higher figure than any of these have ever run. If she can repeat that race, I think she could be a single. Now that's a little bit risky because, I mean, these things are, like Jonathan was saying, these things that get beat, they're all getting beat 10, 15 lengths at maiden 10. I mean, it's hard to rely on 3-year-old fillies that are, you know, that are this bad. But I think I would lean on the 9, and then I would use probably the 5 and the 7, who were, I think they were in that same race where they got beat like 10 and 14 lengths. But at least I think those are the 3 possibles. I think 9, then 5 and 7 in a really crazy race. That this race, I would rather go all than the first leg if I had to use an all.
Interesting, but getting it down to those three, we just got to take our chances. Put the money down and take the chance. That's the name of the game. And the good thing is, from what we've been seeing in these Stronach Fives throughout the run of doing these shows, when you do hit this one, you get paid. So it makes it a little bit easier to take the chances that you need to take when you're dealing with races like Leg A and B in this week's bet. And with that, we'll move on to Leg C. We go from Gulfstream all the way out to Santa Anita. For this one, we've got a 5.5 furlong turf race, $40,000 claimers, 3 and up. Jonathan, do you have any more clarity in this spot?
I thought this was a tough spot, too. It's one of those races when you're looking at the past performances, the old school way, starting at the top and working your way down. You find a horse and you're like, oh, this could be a single. And then you get a little bit further and you're like, oh, I got to use this one, too. And then by the time you get all the way to the bottom, you end up having like five horses you feel like you need to use. Look, I'm gonna have my eyes on Louis Saez out in California this weekend. The way that he was riding in arguably the best riding colony in the world out in New York, now coming out to California, where I feel like that riding colony is probably a cut below what we've seen in New York. I think Louis Saez is gonna be a guy you'll want to keep an eye on this weekend while he rides out in California, especially in these races like this turf sprint where aggression is rewarded. So seeing him show up for Peter Miller there on Blackout, I thought was interesting. Blackout's numbers are a little bit lighter, but I feel like there's going to be an improvement with Louis Saez. And then the horse that was spending some time in my neck of the woods, ran at Lone Star not too long ago, About Our Time. This horse has a lot of early pace figures, has some nice final numbers as well. And when it comes to these turf sprints, I'm either looking for horses that are going to get to the front or have those kind of gaudy final numbers. And I felt like About Our Time, coming from kind of the East Coast to the West Coast as a turf horse, I thought he might have a little bit of an edge in here. But then, you know, there's other ones you got to look at too. The 7 Ultimate Bango, he's got a race 4 races ago that probably make him capable to be a contender in a Breeders' Cup turf sprint. So we got to see if he can kind of find his form again as well. I thought this was a tough race.
Centering around the 2, 8, and 7, it sounds like, with preference for the 2 and the 8, if I'm reading that right, some possibility that we may have to bust that 8 down to a B. We'll see how the rest of the sequence plays out. But Duke, how did you see this one?
Yeah, this is, these are great races in California. It's 5.5 on the turf. I don't know. Is that chute built? Is this a new course that they're going to run? Do you guys know?
I thought this was the same one they were using, and yeah, that those plans are for the future.
I don't think that idea you're talking about, Duke, where they're gonna be able to go further, I don't think that's ready yet. I don't think.
Okay. So this is going to start on the dirt, just like usual. I think there's not a ton of speed in this race. The 2 Blackout might, like Jonathan was saying, Louis Saez is going to put him on the lead. There's no doubt about that. I'm not sure his numbers are – they're not solid enough single a horse like that. So I mean, he's a must use because he's the inside speed. I think there's a sneaky horse in Oil Can Knight who might be very close to the pace, and I thought was on a bad inside last time. He broke from a 12 hole, and I don't understand what Maldonado was doing. He went from a 12 hole and went right to the rail, which I thought was not the place to be at Del Mar. So he's a sneaky little horse that's got tactical speed that I think is going to stay close. If he can sneak into like a 2-hole, 3-hole trip, he could really be a bomb in here. Ultimate Bango must be used on the drop. I'm not sure why they're running him so low, but he has so much back class, he must be used. And About Our Time is the unknown shipper from Remington and Lone Star that has really good solid numbers on 5-furlong turf races. So I'm going to use 2, 6, 7, 8.
You think you'd be inclined, Duke, to use those evenly, or do you see tiering those numbers at all more of an A and B structure?
I probably won't tier in this race because I think Ultimate Bango is a little negative, and I don't trust that Blackout has good enough numbers to single. So I think I'm just going to use all 4 equally.
Okay, that makes sense. We move on to Leg D, and my computer, of course, conveniently giving me a bit of a spinning wheel of death here, JK. Hopefully it's not messing with the recording. What, JK, what can you tell us about Leg D of this week's Stronach 5?
Yeah, no, it's the ninth at Pimlico. It's a mile and an eighth on the turf, and it felt like Jamie Ness had a nice little hand here with two horses with some tactical speed, the two Nick Papa Giorgio, and then also the eight, Some Kind of Magic. Both those horses are tactical. They have speed figures that fit in here. I thought this was a tough race, though. You also have to figure out what you're going to do with the six Howlman. This horse was a $600,000 horse at Tattersall. Obviously, Tattersall is something we've heard quite a bit about here in North America as of late, with horses like Newspaper of Record and Digital Age that Chad Brown had bought from that sale and brought over here. So I think there's a little bit of an interesting class situation with Howlman, but now, you know, in this spot, this optional claiming race. So I thought the two horses for Jamie Ness were interesting with tactical speed, because it felt like it doesn't feel like both of them are going to go and hook up. And those are the horses that feel like they can be in position early to take advantage of that. And then the three Dream Doctor was a little bit interesting. Comes in off a 358-day layoff. But the horse has won twice off a layoff, so I'm not really too concerned about that. Has some back races, nice turn of foot. If the pace happens to quicken up a little bit here, I thought the three Dream Doctor was another one that was interesting. But I felt pretty good trying to get away with the Nesses and then also Dream Doctor, just in case he's ready off the break.
Howlman, did you want to leave in as a potential backup for Elizabeth Voss coming out of that? You mentioned that Tattersall sale. We just did a preview with Nick Luck of the upcoming sale there. Folks who are interested could find. And we actually, Nick sat down and talked to Chad Brown about why he likes that sale and the success he's had there. Where did you end up at the end of the day on Howlman?
Yeah, to Duke's point, the fact that Trevor McCarthy shows up, I think, is an indicator that this horse might be live. You know, Scotty Silver's not putting Trevor McCarthy, Scotty Silver being Trevor's agent, not putting him on horses that aren't live. He does really well in the Mid-Atlantic. So I think the fact that he shows up, this is the type of horse that, from a budget standpoint, if we can't afford to have him as an A, I'd be fine using him as a B horse. But if for whatever reason we can get skinny in some other spots and we can have him as an A, it'd be nice to have him up there at a nice little price.
I will make a note of that. Duke, where are you in this one?
I'm having trouble with this race. This is these long turf races in Maryland. I haven't had very much luck with. I landed on the 9 Gunnison, but not very confident in definitely no single here, but two back, you know, ran one of three other than at Laurel, solid number. Last time didn't do any running whatsoever, but the pace was real slow. I just hoping, you know, coming back, I just hope that he can come back to his race two back. Definitely going to use that one as my A horse in here. The 12 Clear Vision coming out of a one other than, he's probably moving up in class here, but seemed to have a nice big kick last time after steadying at the start. I got to use him. The others that Jonathan mentioned, I think there's a lot of them that have a chance. The 2, the 3, the 6, the 7, the 8. I think this is going to be a race where I'm going to have to have like A's, B's, and C's, because I'm going to put the 9 as my A and probably a bunch of B's and bunch of C's. I'm going to probably make 3 or 4 or 5 different tickets here and scale this race so that I can probably take a chance in other legs, as maybe go back to that Gulfstream second leg and single that 9 on some tickets and use a bunch in this race. It's probably what one of my angles will be.
That multiple ticket construction is something that I wish we had time through the course of these shows to talk about more. We've talked a lot about using the A, B, and C method, but that idea of coming up with specific combinations of tickets where you really get stuck into a horse, like Duke mentioned, potentially on a certain subset of tickets, the 9 in leg B, that can allow you to be super inclusive in other places. I absolutely love the ABCX as a starting point, but there's no doubt that you can get more sophisticated and increase your edge and your leverage by the more work you put in on the bet writing side. And it's something we will be covering more here on future shows. But for now, let's move on to leg E. We head out up to Golden Gate. And we're going to be looking at their third race, a mile and a 16th on the turf, 6250 claimers, fillies and mares, 3 and up. JK, how are we going to get paid?
Oh, well, they couldn't make it any easier for us to try to wrap this thing up. I Golden Gate's one of those places where I feel like I've had more success just trying to get skinny and narrow where I want to be, because if I'm wrong, I'm like all the way wrong. It's like, I'm like, you know, certain places it's like, oh, well, I don't know about this one, I don't know about that one. And then that one wins. When I'm wrong at Golden Gate, it just happens to be just something that I never saw coming. And so I thought the three was interesting. Tink's Twirl. If you look at the race two back, I thought that on the turf, that race was pretty good. Horse has some tactical speed, so you know this horse will be able to get into some sort of position and try to avoid getting a rough trip. The speed figure that day was fine. I liked the turn of foot, kind of quickening away from there, although the horse got beat that day. And then came back and tried the poly at a really short price and didn't run all that well, but gets back onto the turf. I was going to just try, based on these other opinions I have in these other races, I was going to try to single the three and get away with it.
Yeah, I think that's the most likely winner, Tink's Twirl. She's making a pretty sizable drop in class off her last solid turf race. I mean, if she runs anywhere near the race on June 14th, this race is over if she runs that race. She's just far superior if she runs that race. The only other horse that I'm a little interested in is the two Side Effect. She comes out of her last turf race was a one other than, so this is a sizable drop in class also, and I get somewhat of a better rider because I had a 7-pound bug on her last time. So I think if I were to go in this race, I got to go narrow because I think my rest of my ticket's going to be too big. So I'm going three, then two. Two will be my B, three will be my A.
Excellent. Any other thoughts specifically on betting strategy about the sequence, or should I go ahead and just slug our numbers into Ticketmaker, making my best guesses at A's and B's, and go from there? How much had you thought about the specifics of strategy and what things were going to cost here, JK?
You know, honestly, what my thought was I wanted to see where Duke was. And, you know, Duke has a unique talent, like where some of us don't, is that Duke is playing everywhere all the time. So there's certain things that I wanted to make sure I didn't miss on Duke, while the rest of us stop playing some certain tracks because other ones are opening and we're focusing it, you know, at Santa Anita because Santa Anita's open. We'll do, and then, you know, we kind of get away from Gulfstream a little bit. Duke's always playing Gulfstream. So I wanted to make sure that I didn't miss something with Duke, and he did have some good opinions there. So as far as ticket construction, I feel like that my ticket is going to be built around trying to get away with the single in the last leg. The other reason that I kind of like singling in the last leg, if you want to, I try not to put myself in a box, but singling in the last leg allows you to see what you're alive for. So if there's horses that you're concerned about, you can do some things in the wind pool that can get you to kind of get you a return. And I you can't do that in middle legs. If you single in a middle leg and you're worried about some other horses, you can't really hedge because then you're in trouble. And so one of the things I'll do, instead of using B horses, I'll just hope I can get alive to the A horse and then try to get cute with maybe some win hedging on that last leg. And, you know, I'm typically not a hedger, but I think in those situations, it's just a different strategy for using your B horses without having to have a crazy expensive ticket as far as the pick five goes.
I don't mind hedging when it's to include a horse that you wanted to include but decided against. I don't like betting against my own opinion hedging, to your point, JK. So if you're saying you're necessarily trying to be super skinny, it's logical to me that then instead of playing those backups in the ticket and blowing up the cost of your bet, that you'd look at ways to include them in the last leg. Doug, Duke, as a professional player, when do you hedge, if ever?
Very rarely. I mean, in this case, I mean, when you get it alive in these strong fives, I mean, you could be alive for the pool. So you have to do some kind of betting in that last leg if you're light. I mean, it just depends on what your ticket is kind of alive to. If you're alive to one horse in the last leg, I agree, you could bet a couple horses to win it and at least get more than your initial investment back. Hedging for me is tough because I'm doing this every day. So if I hedged all the time, it would be, I think my mind would go absolutely berserk because I would just kill myself when, you know, I'd be so mad at myself when I actually took profits away on the hedge, you know, and you just keep thinking over and over, why did I do that? Why did I do that? Why did I do that? So I tend not to hedge. These tickets are tough. I think this is what makes, you know, gambling. You're playing a dollar pick five and you look at this sequence, and we have five very, very difficult races. I mean, so this is where you can really make or break your year. You hit one of these Stronach fives. So this is I think it's a good chance to take a single on that. I do think it's a good chance to single that nine horse at Gulfstream, because there's just not much else to rely on when you look at those five races. And I have a big trip on that horse, and I don't think she'll be 5-2 either. I think she'll be a little longer than that.
Well, I slugged in the numbers using basically just intuiting from what you guys were saying about A's and B's. And to do it with the two B tickets does get super expensive. That gets you to 640. That's more than we typically put up here, and I don't think we want to do that. Now, this is including JK's 5 as an A in leg B as well. But if we were to take out the A's with two B's, that gets the main opinions down to 324. Let's go back to that Gulfstream race. What do you think, JK? Would you be okay singling that 9 and busting your 5 back to a B, or do you feel strongly about the 5 being an A in leg B?
You know, it's nothing about that race goes hand in hand with the word strong.
Mm-hmm.
And so I also am aware that if the 6 won that race, I wouldn't be shocked. So I think you need the 5, but I understand the idea of for a budgetary standpoint, if you want to press some other places using, singling the 9 there. I just think the 5 has had some excuses. It seems to be, as tactical and seems to not spit it as hard as all the rest of these horses have done. Like Duke mentioned, if the 9 runs that race 3 back, they're all running for second. But you know, the 9 has been beaten 16-4, 9-8, 9, 36-15-2. So it's just hard to single in that race. If I was going to single someone, I could understand. But I think if we can get away with just using just those two, I think there's a way that we could try to get skinny elsewhere.
I don't think this is a bad sequence of 5 tickets the way I wrote it up. Let me run it through to you. And keeping in mind that we're on a budget here, because here's the problem. Even if you single the 5 there, excuse me, even if you single the 9 there, and you move the 5 back to a B, your A's and 2 B's tickets are still going to be over budget for what we typically do. I think the way here to save money is to avoid doing a 2 B ticket and just try to be right. So the way I have it graded now, and you guys feel free to chime in on this and make sure I wrote down your opinions, that I intuited your opinions correctly, but I've got in leg A, the 3, 4, and the 10 as A's, and the 6-11 as B's. Then
that's what I said. I'm not sure that was JK's, but that's mine.
But you like, yeah, you wanted to press the four. And you mentioned the 6 as a backup, though. So I feel like,
yeah, but I'm okay with that. I mean, Duke brought up a good point about the work back at Belmont with a horse that's not a world beater, and the idea of Asmussen just trying to find an easy spot. And this horse is going to be very singled. So I have no problem with trying to pick up some equity in the wager with some other ones that make some sense.
Then in the second leg, as discussed, 5 and 9 as A's. I did leave the 7 in as a B as well. I don't think that adds very much to the ticket if we're just doing the A's with 1 B. So I think I'm good with that. Then moving on to the third leg, I just graded it as 4 A's. I just went 2, 6, 7, 8 and didn't use any backups there. I think that was the whole run of horses that the two of you talked about, JK liking those Ness runners, and I think Duke mentioning the other two.
Yep, 100%.
Then moving on to leg D, this is where we are the spreadiest, which matches, I think, both of your opinions. 2, 8, and 9 as A's, 3, 6, 7, 12 as B's. Any objections there?
Well, that's the Pimlico race, right?
Yes.
The other one was
thin. You know what we could do here in this situation is if Duke has an opinion on which one he prefers over the 2 and the 8, we could make one of those be an A and then move the other one back, because Duke's got a pretty strong opinion about the 9 being that kind of key horse in that race. You know, we don't have to use both the 2 and the 8. We can pick which one of those Jamie Ness horses we want to keep as an A and move the other one back as a B. I mean, that would be fine with me. My vote would be the 8 on that one.
Moving the 8 back.
I would also vote on the 8. I think the 8's a pretty sharp horse that has speed. So
okay,
so we can put the two back to a B. That'll save us some money.
Yep, that's not a bad idea. And then looking at the last race, just playing it with the three as the lone A and the two as the lone backup. And yeah, that comes out as $272 worth of tickets, which is, you know, very much in line with what we've been doing. And I think still leaves us a chance for a score. So if you guys are good, I think we're gonna call that done.
Sounds good.
Let's do it.
Excellent. Excellent. All right. Well, guys, I appreciate your time today. Very nice to spend my lunch hour from being a teacher, first wrestling with technology, but then getting a chance to talk to you guys about racing. I thought your insights were fantastic. Obviously, we're leaving tons of meat on the bone in terms of getting you guys to talk about wagering strategy. But hey, you know, sometimes we got to leave the audience wanting more. There'll be another day for us to hopefully drill down and talk more about this stuff. And Duke, real pleasure having you back on the airwaves. Godspeed this weekend, my friend.
Thank you. May the horse be with you.
You got to send Harvey a check every time you say that, you know. He'll be happy for the shout out.
Yes. It's always fun to be on your show. Thanks, Pete. I enjoyed it. JK, always a pleasure.
And JK, amazing to have you back on the airwaves. We will do it again soon. Any closing thoughts for the listeners?
Now looking forward to some fun racing this weekend. It feels like Breeders' Cup's around the corner, and some racing this weekend will kind of continue to push us in that direction, so that'll be fun.
Couple of reminders for the audience. Free daily racing form past performances are available. If you go to drf.com/ITM and use the promo code money. Also want to remind folks about the Golden Hour Double and the brand new Golden Hour Pick 4. Any day that Golden Gate and Santa Anita are racing, these are going to close out the cards. Very horse player friendly terms. $1 minimum on the pick four. It's a $5 minimum on that double low takeout. Check it out. These are bets designed by horse players for horse players, and we want to support them the same way we like to support the Stronach 5. Most of all, I want to thank all of you, the listeners, for making these shows so much fun to do, and all the feedback you give us, constructive criticism, shout-outs, tweets, whatever it is, feel free to holler at us. We love the interaction and appreciate it very much. This show's been a production of In the Money Media. Our business manager is Drew Cotney. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your Stronach 5 photos.